Why do so many creators and brands struggle to maintain their audience across platforms? And what's the key to unlocking a loyal following in today's digital world? In an era where traditional social media platforms offer little control and fleeting loyalty, today's conversation dives deep into the transformative approach of leveraging blockchain technology for audience engagement. Today, we're joined by Adam Levy, and we'll explore the journey he went on from transitioning from Web 2 to Web 3 as we dissect the innovative strategies for building a dedicated on-chain audience through real-world experiments, insights, and the untapped potential of digital assets like NFTs and POAPs. Join us as we unveil the blueprint for future-proofing your audience engagement in the Web 3 world. GMGM, welcome to Web 3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. We make sense of an on-chain world in constant transformation. I'm your host today, Jay Bird, and I believe that being chronically on-chain is going to change your world. GMGM, Levy, welcome to Web3 Academy.
GM, thank you for having me. Long time coming. We made it happen.
No kidding. We've been talking about this for a while. You just got back from ETH Denver. You got a bit of a cold, but you're making the times for us. Thank you so much. Before we jump in, quick vibe check. How was ETH Denver? What'd you go away feeling like?
ETH Denver was phenomenal. Energy was through the roof. We're so back, or at least we're the cusp of being so back. I came back feeling sick, but I'll take it because we're so back and I'll own it. But overall, ETH Denver was amazing. 2 years ago, I met Ellie at ETH Denver, my co-founder at Bello. So ETH Denver has a special home in our hearts. It's always good to be back, always good to see our online friends. I treated ETH Denver differently this year, though. I remember when I was trying to, like, in the early days of going to ETH Denver, I have this, like, specific email that's just for registering for events so that I don't get spammed with BS after the events, because all the events use it for lead gen. And I remember just, like, spam submitting every single event that I see on the spreadsheet, just so I could be everywhere every time, even though it was triple booked for one event. And now I was like, forget that. We're doing one-on-ones. We're doing as many one-on-ones. It's going to be an intimate week. It's going to be a focused week. It's going to be a good week. And even through that, I felt like we're so back. So we're back. We are so back.
I love it. We're so back. I love it. Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time. These are the times when, you know, my parents start asking me about crypto. My friends are sending me messages. I hope it's not a top signal. I don't think it is yet, but it's good times. I hope to be at ETH Denver alongside you next year. Maybe grab one of those one-on-ones. But for today's conversation, you and I have been talking for a while about getting you on the show. You podcast yourself in space, Mint Podcast, fantastic podcast. All of our listeners will put the link in the show notes so you guys can check out Levy's podcast as well. And you've been doing some really cool stuff. You've been experimenting, I would say, like, cutting edge experimenting with how to distribute content online, how to build an on-chain audience, doing a lot of the stuff that not many people are there yet. But everyone listening to this podcast is very interested in building their business online, whether they're an artist, whether they're a creator, whether they're a professional, whether they have a Web 2 or Web 3 product. So everyone's trying to understand, okay, like, how do we use on-chain social? How do we use NFTs? How do we engage with our audience on-chain? And you have some of the answers to that, which is why I'm so stoked to have you on for today's conversation. Let's just start with a brief intro. Can you just give a bit of a background and intro to the audience on who you are and what you've been up to over the past few years as you build on-chain?
I'm Adam Levy, levy.eth on Twitter, Levy on Farcaster, Levy Chain, soon to be Levy on Lens. I've been in crypto since 2017. I got started during the height of one of the cycles when Bitcoin hit its peak of 20K. I was in college at the time, studying at the University of Southern California. And I remember seeing Bitcoin hit 20K, was really, really curious how something like that can even hit such a high number, but fell more in love with the underlying technology. So entering winter break of that year, I kind of spent all my time during those 4 weeks trying to learn as much as I could, as much as I can about Bitcoin. started writing in Facebook groups. If you want to learn about Bitcoin, I'm like renting out these rooms on campus on Saturdays. Like I'll be doing whiteboard sessions. I was very much like a Jehovah's Witness on campus, just trying to teach people about Bitcoin and trying to get people to join this club, this crypto club. And I was like one of the only non-technical people in the club. We were a club of like 350 students. It was called the Trojan Blockchain Society. Now it's called Blockchain at USC. And we did everything from like recruiting events for Coinbase, white paper roundtables. We did hackathons. We even got like $500,000 from the university to start like a venture fund. And I was like the crypto guy on the team. We were all faking it till we make it. We had, well, make it, right? It's like, it was like nothing was really serious, but it felt like really cool at the time. And then I got like an internship working for this guy named Tim Draper. And I was interning for about a year. And then when I graduated, I joined his firm full time at his venture fund. Yeah, I guess I was there for about 2.5 years. And when I quit, I started this podcast called Mint. And you kind of alluded to it already. Mint, for the longest time, was documenting consistently the Web3 creator economy. I've published well over 400 episodes from long form and short form. I have a newsletter and always be experimenting. ABE, always be experimenting. Mint led me to Bello, and Bello led me to this podcast today. So that's the journey.
Beautiful. And we'll talk about Bello and that product later on. I mean, we'll talk about it throughout the show, but we'll get to that later on. I want to start at Mint. So you've done 7 seasons now. How many seasons have you done?
7 seasons, yeah.
7 seasons. Okay. And season two, you decided to do some experimenting, ABE.
Yes.
You embraced ABE. So what did you do in season two? Take us to sort of the origin of what you did in season two and how that led to you starting to really experiment in a lot of unique ways to engage with people on chain that I think all of our listeners are going to be like, oh shit, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Why am I not doing that with my brand?
Yeah, season two, I had an incredible sponsor called Poop, who at the time, shout out Patricio, legend, really believed in me before anybody else and supported me, along with Janiel from Coinvise. They were consistent sponsors for the podcast before I really had an audience, both off-chain or on-chain. And in season two, I started giving up Poops to my community of listeners and to my speakers. And I did it as a way to earmark the people who participated across each season. And I felt like at some point I could look back and really understand all the people that came across every touch point throughout my journey. At the time, when I say it now, it seems more obvious. It seems more clear. And like the strategy behind that was very clear. But at that time, it was just like, let's just do this. It's just fun. Let's just do it. Like, let's give NFTs. Let's practice what we preach and try to be as crypto native as we can, even through our content and our strategy. And then with that, the sponsorships that I gave out were through NFTs. So while everybody was doing B2C sales for NFTs, I was doing B2B sales for my NFTs. And I had people like Poop, like Celo, Polygon, Coinvise, CyberConnect, Lens, as seasons progressed, buy my NFTs as a means of unlocking access to my audience for that season. But it all started in season two with that Poop of giving people these like commemorative badges for being a part of the season.
Mm-hmm. And Poops were, I mean, I feel like it's funny how time is so elusive when you work in crypto or blockchain space. It feels like just yesterday that Poops were like all the rage. Everybody was talking about them. And I haven't heard about them so much more recently. For those who don't know, Poops are non-transferable NFTs, valueless NFTs. The purpose of them is to, like a badge. A badge is a good word to explain a Poop. It's something that's meant to, well, I mean, it literally stands for proof of attendance protocol. It's meant to prove that you were there. And so you were giving Poops to your listeners, correct? Or was it your guest?
I was giving both to guests and both to listeners.
Right.
Eventually, so, I stopped giving them to guests and I just continued giving them to listeners because I could technically like earmark my guests. I would create content around them. I'd create blogs around them. I'd create episodes around them. So I didn't really need to memorialize their participation necessarily. It was more so the people listening because I didn't really have like a direct line of connection through Spotify or Apple Music or even through Substack. And Discord, I hated Discord, even though I had one. I hated Discord and I hated building Telegram communities. That was one thing that I was never good at. I was never good at building a necessarily community like Bankless has, for example. Mm-hmm. I really focus on building an audience to get like reach for my content. Mm-hmm. And by default, there came a community through that, but I didn't have like spend the resources to really do that. But my way of sort of like building some form of community for the little patients that I did have to do that entire management process was by rewarding people with pull-ups for their participation.
And so what motivated you to start doing this? What were you trying to achieve? And maybe that leads us into what did you achieve as a result of giving out all of these POAPs? How did that lead you to be able to produce a successful podcast, get more eyeballs on it, get more reach, build a community, even though you're focused on building an audience? Take us through sort of that journey and the learnings that happened as a result of that.
One season led to another. Season two finished, season three came around, and I just kept on doing that consistently. And by the time I hit season six, these NFTs went like viral, like completely mm-hmm. viral. At the time, getting like 10, 15,000 collects on a thing was very rare, like very, very rare. Now with Zora doing B2B NFT sales, like they can get hundreds of thousands of mints because these brands have larger reaches and small-time creators like myself. But at the time, by the time season six hit, like I was able to sell like so many free, these were free NFTs, right? Like mm-hmm. very much like what's happening in the macro right now. People are just like doing very bottomless pit sort of NFTs. And I was doing those for the longest time. I never really charged for my NFTs. I should have charged $1 as a transaction fee. I probably could have made more money, but it was never, the point was never to make money off mm-hmm. these people and the people listening. It was more so just to build more of an audience and to keep people engaged. And I don't know why. I just felt like at some point, like this would be valuable. Like, I don't know why. I just kept doing it consistently. I just knew like if I saw and I could understand everybody that collected every single NFT from every single season, I could understand them and just see, not even like deep analytics like Bella. Like I didn't even think of that mm-hmm. far yet. Just mm-hmm. more like this wallet collected 1, 3, and 5, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, it's probably, I could probably do this in Excel, find a way to do this. Like that's how I was thinking about it. So the more NFTs I gave out, the larger my newsletter became, the larger my reach got, the more I was able to connect a wallet address to an email address, the more I was able to do on-chain activities, or now they're called quests, right? Or boosts. I was very much using a form of HubSpot, Bonfire, Third Web Contracts, random ass landing pages on WordPress.
You just patched this all together.
I literally patched this all together.
UX would have been...
It was horrible. Like, do you know how many clicks a user had to do just to claim the NFT? Yeah. People did it. Like, I think part of like us being chronically on chain and participants in crypto is like, we'll go through feats to get the treat, mm-hmm. you know, like to get the mint, that said thing. So I just really understood the process of creating some form of funnel using free NFTs and being able to link and grow my newsletter through that, and then eventually increase my download count, and then eventually increase my Twitter followers through that. And I remember one day, like there was one week where I grew like 15,000 or like 12,000 or so followers within a period of 1 week or 2 weeks, right? Because I feel like I like perfected like a funnel to an extent. I was able to kind of like bring users cross-platform with me, right? So I learned a lot. I learned a lot through that process. And there's some things I would have done differently, but definitely every decision that I made has led me to this moment, like of where we are today with what I'm doing with my time today. So forever grateful for it.
That mindset is very much, I mean, it's no surprise that you're a serial entrepreneur and founder, starting by founding this Trojan blockchain group at USC and all the way through your life. You're an experimenter. You're fearless and you're trying things that most people are like, well, but what's the playbook? And nobody told me how to do this, so I don't know. So kudos to you. And just to go back, there's been over 100,000 wallets that have collected these NFTs that you've distributed, right? Like these are
not necessarily collected, but either those who've submitted my forms, either those who've collected my NFTs, those who've signed into my website, those who've collected my POAPs. There's multiple touch points where a wallet has interacted with my brand, quote unquote, on chain. So when I say like I built an on chain, and even my Lens followers, right? Like 18,000 followers on Lens, those are all wallets following my brand from Mint to Levy Chain. So when I think about my on chain audience, I don't think about just the NFT collectors. 2 years ago in the last cycle, there was the notion of like the only way to build an audience is by selling NFTs. But soon people are going to realize that the way you build an on-chain audience is through every single tool or product that you use that's crypto enabled, that engages with a wallet address, is in some shape or form part of your top of funnel or some form of entry point in your funnel for building and interacting and growing your on-chain audience. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean when I say like an on-chain audience over 100,000 wallets. Some are more valuable than others, but overall, the whole entire top of funnel is way over 100,000 wallets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, significant numbers that you have achieved. And it's interesting because a lot of people that are currently experimenting with on-chain, they get low numbers on-chain, right? And I'm curious why you think that is. Like, and maybe this kind of goes back to like, maybe actually, let's take a step back here. Let's explain the difference in like the concept. We're using this concept of on-chain audience a lot. What is an on-chain audience and how does that differ from more traditional Web2 audience building?
When you're a Web2 creator, company, enterprise, the unit of value that links your audience, your user base together is oftentimes an email address. And those email addresses are oftentimes scattered across many, many platforms. So if you're hosting an event and you're using Eventbrite email, the user has to submit that email, fill out their details, information over and over again. If they're trying to buy something from Shopify, from your checkout store, if they don't have like one click pay set up, then they have to submit their email, their number, their address, whatever, their full name, whatever. If they are trying to follow you on Instagram, then you got to send them to Instagram to follow you there. And if you're trying to send them from Instagram to TikTok, then you have to have a link in bio that then sends them there. So oftentimes, the unique identifiers that link like a Web2 audience are often emails or like these bridges, like link in bios. Previously, it was like oftentimes like cookies, right? Like you track a user on the internet very meticulously. But even those are sunsetting more and more. So the unit, the identifier is oftentimes email address in many instances. And creators oftentimes build the most power when they have like an adequate newsletter with many subscribers, right? Or it's the link in bio tool that sort of acts as a bridge between all these like siloed islands across social media from their website and whatever. That's a Web2 audience. It's a restricted, it's a bordered, it's a gated silo, it's an island. All these independent islands that sort of live together, but not together. And in Web3, the on-chain audience is very different. Whereas we, as the individuals, as the users, as the platforms, the enterprises, we build on-chain audiences, which means that we are the platform. So what that means is that wherever we go, our community of wallets can follow us. So it doesn't matter if I build a submission form on DForm, I can then find a way to get those people to engage with my Zora link really easily for minting. It doesn't matter if I build a subscriber base on a mirror or paragraph with a blast of an email, I can get those wallets to easily convert to collecting my Zora URL, right? Or my third, or engaging with my sound drop or whatever it may be. There's all these linkages in Web3 that just don't exist in Web2. And that's made possible because we're all collectively building on a shared network called Ethereum, right? Mm. So when more apps build on top of these networks, they just contribute to the entire network effect of the network itself. And the apps put the user in control of their audience. That's how I see it. So when I think about building an on-chain audience, the same wallets that collect my stuff on Zora will also follow me on Lens, will also subscribe to my Mirror blog, will also connect their wallet via Dynamic and Privy to authenticate to my website, are the same people that are going to collect my PoOps when I meet them in person. It's all linked together, right? Mm-hmm. In ways that I could never do in Web2.
And so you talked about the building a funnel. And I think this is very interesting because you don't really hear a lot of people yet thinking about more traditional marketing tactics like a funnel in the on-chain world, mainly because the on-chain world still, it doesn't really have the UX to allow all these steps to happen. So just, you mentioned you got 12,000 followers in 1 week from Twitter because you had perfected this funnel. Take us through a little bit, and maybe that's not the specific example you want to give. How did you build an on-chain funnel, and was it back and forth between on-chain and Web2, and you're connecting both of them. I know you mentioned you were sort of Band-Aid or taping, gluing together a few different tools to make this work. What were the steps and what were the results that you were able to achieve from doing that?
When you go to adamlevy.io/NFT, you'll see basically a landing page that often acts as my top of funnel, the very first entry point where a user interacts with me. On that landing page, you see a submission to collect your Season 7 NFT. You see an email and a wallet address form embedded through HubSpot. When the user submits that form, they automatically get a trigger to their email, which is like a drip email that tells them, welcome to my community, blah, 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 blah. You've enrolled in getting the end of season NFT. Here's what you have to do to solidify your participation so that you earn this NFT. Do X, Y, and Z steps, right? And one of them is like...
Just to pause. So you're collecting both email and wallet address. That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Right? Like absolutely. You're doing, because you recognize that you still need email. It's not like you're saying...
You still need email. Yeah. You still need email. So when they get that email, an automated email, it then has a link to follow me on Twitter. Twitter has a really cool feature where you can customize the URL. When they click on the link, it automatically pops up the follow modal. And then that's the only thing that they see on the screen, like follow this account. So then they follow it and then they go back. And then they're like, okay, I also need to subscribe to his YouTube as well. So then they subscribe to the YouTube. And you got to do all these things to eventually get the NFT to prove your participation, right? And then I can see on the email, like who actually opened the email versus who clicked the email. Right? How many times did they click the email? And then from there, I can kind of get an idea as to how many people engage properly with my top correctly, right? And then at the end of the season, I then give out the NFT and I allow less people to claim the NFT.
Based upon the actions that they took during that season.
Correct. Right.
Okay. So you're gamifying it then.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, for sure. And then part of it is also like follow me on Lens, right? And like comment on my thing or show me that you're here, like say hello, you know, it depends whatever it is. Like, or it's like I have this end of season thing campaign called The Vault. And for you to get access to The Vault, which is a tomb of never before seen content from a group of curated individuals, you have to participate in the season and then eventually you'll get access to The Vault. So it depends whatever, or I'll be doing on-chain campaigns with Lens, for example, where if you want a Lens profile, do X, Y, and Z, participate and show, and at some point you may be selected for a Lens profile, right? Mm-hmm. To get a Lens profile to mint. So once I started building like an arsenal of like wallets linked to emails, I can then work with brands to effectively drive traffic to their campaigns and then get my audience to convert on whatever it is that they wanted the user to convert on-chain with. And then we can measure the conversion rate accordingly. So once you started building a database of those two identities linked, you then had so much power, right? And then we didn't even talk about the like once you analyze that entire database and like understand all these people and who's
actually you're stealing my next question, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you learn? What did you learn once you had this data? Open our eyes to what you can see about people from having their wallet, because you can't really see much from having their email address.
Correct.
It doesn't give you much, I mean, other than what you would have in your own HubSpot and your own, you know, whatever web tools you've set up to measure their traffic on your own website. Sure, you could do a little bit of that, but what can you learn from on-chain data?
So one of the things that I learned is my audience is relatively native to platforms like Zora. And I knew that based off things that they were collecting, and I had never really created content with Zora before. And this was before Zora is the behemoth that they are today, the brand that they have today, the dominance and market share with mints that they have today on primary sales, like way before that. So I brought an executive from the team on to the podcast, and lo and behold, mentioning certain keywords like Zora and the email and the newsletter and et cetera, got that episode to perform significantly better than a traditional episode. Oh, this is interesting. I was able to use on-chain data as a way to get myself informed to what my audience likes based off what they collect and what they do, and I can create better content to serve them. Let's try it again. Brought on the CTO. That episode also outperformed every other, like on average, other episodes that I've published. Okay, there's something here. Brought Jacob on. Okay, that episode also outperformed. Like, I'm going to start finding sponsors now, right? So let's actually forget about me. Let's talk about like a different case study because maybe I got lucky. Let's use a case study like Rehash. Okay, Rehash is another Web3 podcast. Shout out Diana Chen. She actively uses Bello. One of the things she learned in preparation for her latest season, she built an on-chain audience using Joke Race by doing contests, as she's been doing every single season, I think, for the most part, and also her podcast NFTs. And the linkage between those two on-chain audiences, she was able to learn that about 7% of her audience was native to Zerion's community. Oh, interesting. So what she went and did, she went and sold sponsorship for $20,000 to Zerion using on-chain data as a way to justify that their audience is meld and she reaches their audience, at least a certain segment of them. So now you're like thinking through like, oh, whoa, like there's a whole new world as to how people are going to be not only building on-chain audiences, but monetizing on-chain audiences, right? Like I also did this for sponsorships as well. Imagine how many creators exist on Paragraph and on Mirror and just in general in Substack, whatever, that have crypto native audiences, but don't really know how much more value they can unlock. And by the way, these are numbers and figures that really very much so break the norm of monetizing a podcast and a newsletter, right? Like typical monetization for a podcast is measured based off download count. But if you can reach a certain segment of an X of someone's audience or of an audience of a certain profile, a certain interest category, then you could go bid for that ad slot in question, right? Yeah. Realistically, like Diana doesn't need to go to Zerion. Like she can go to Uniswap. She can go to Rainbow. Right. She can go to MetaMask, right? To just show them like percentage of my users are like native to X community. And maybe like wallets is maybe not the best example in this case because everybody uses a wallet in Web3, but it could be for a fashion brand. It could be for development communities. Like if she realizes that X percent of their audience is attending hackathons and developer-related meetups, et cetera. Like maybe she has a high concentration of developers. This is something that she would put in her media kit when she goes and presents the Rehash community to sponsors, right? So now we're like really getting in the weeds of Bello. But I think like it's important to note that because there's actually real new opportunities that are emerging from the fact that people building on-chain audiences and being able to capture and understand more of the value that they create on-chain.
And this is fascinating. I just like I get so excited about this stuff because it's so obvious in a way, like it's right in front of our face, but so few brands or creators, artists are actually doing anything about this. Like we are still very much living in this Web2 world where if I have somebody's email address, that doesn't mean I also know that they use that same email address to sign up for, you know, to buy a ticket on Live Nation or Ticketmaster. Like, I don't know that, right? You have no idea about that person at all outside of what you know from your interaction with them. Whereas it in on-chain, because there is this simple action of collecting that happens across and is growing rapidly right now. And I feel like you have probably have some stats around just how much on-chain data we are creating. I think that we all think we're not creating that much on-chain data, but we're actually creating a shit ton of on-chain data. And when you have somebody's, where this all starts, it starts by collecting the wallet address. If you're a brand and you have not figured out a way to collect wallet addresses right now, you are missing out on an absolute goldmine. Whether you're a podcast and you're trying to sell sponsorship, whether you're a clothing brand that's trying to attract more people to your clothes, like whatever it is, you have a potential to get so much data just by getting wallet addresses. That's why I think more brands need to have some sort of strategy around how do you collect wallet addresses. I mean, best example, Coinbase is probably the best example of that. Simply just doing these massive free mints that they've done. I mean, they've probably done like five of them at this point, Stand With Crypto. They've done the
Base Introduced.
Yeah.
Base Evolves, there's so many. And it's not even that. It's also like the wallets that follow the Base channel, the wallets that on Farcaster, right? Or on Warpcast, the wallets that follow the Base handle on Farcaster. There's so many, like the people that follow Jesse Pollock, right? Mm-hmm. The pull-ups that they've issued, if they have issued pull-ups, I think there was like a Bitcoin Pizza pull-up that they've issued. Like there's so many touch points. And I just want to like actually share my screen and show you something. There's actually more Web3 data published every day in the form of terabytes than there is of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok combined. It's on track. It's on track to actually surpass YouTube. And a lot of this is measured through like Web3 native sources like Filecoin and Arweave. But this is like a whole new data set that folks like us have the power to experiment with. And this is just happening. And nobody really knows. Nobody really understands. And it's a gold mine of an opportunity. And this is like, we're just at the cusp, right? Like, we're not even, there's not even mass adoption of crypto.
This is crazy. So like, here we are. We're seeing, and for those listening, Levy's filled up a spreadsheet that shows a bar chart that basically just shows the amount of data coming from TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube every day. And then also coming from Filecoin and Arweave, which are obviously on chain. And the Filecoin and Arweave is more than Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok combined. And here's the thing. All that data that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube, it's all in a walled garden. You can't access that data. You can't do anything with that data. So who gives a fuck, kind of, right? Like, you know, it's great that it's all out there. There is some tools that you can use to somewhat analyze that data, but it's pretty rudimentary. Whereas this on-chain data, the amount of information you can get once you have somebody's wallet address, such as, oh, wow, out of all the wallet addresses I have, 10% of them are part of, I don't know, Michelin's Web3 Club or Mercedes Web3 Club. So like, okay, great. I now know I have direct crossover, or, you know, half of them are Pudgy holders. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
Or they mostly hold ETH, not Bitcoin. Okay, they're all Ethereum. They're all on those chains more than they're interested in Bitcoin, or they're all Solana based. Whatever it is, these are massive insights. I kind of want to lead into maybe
Bitcoin. I want to add something. I think it's important for the listener to understand, Jay, that there's a difference between things being on-chain versus Web3 native. So most of this is not like in a contract, like in a smart contract, quote unquote, on the blockchain, but these are tokens that otherwise link out to file types, right? And sources through Filecoin and Arweave. And those data sets tend to be more accessible, right? Than traditional like Trad Web2 walled gardens. So I think that's an important distinction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Bello for a second. We've teased it a few times. You can tell us, what is Bello, and is all this data being pulled into Bello, and how is it being used, and go for it.
Bello is really focused right now in the short term to build the ultimate top of funnel to be able to aggregate all the touch points in which you build an on-chain audience. So whether that be the people signing in through your dynamic and privy wallet auths, whether that be people collecting your commemorative NFTs, whether that be people collecting and submitting your Luma links or collecting your token proof tickets or your Get Protocol tickets, whether that be the people claiming your PoOps, whether that be the people following you on Farcast or Lens or Warpcast, whether that be, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? Yeah. People submitting your forms on Deform. The vision for Bello in the short term is to be the most aggregate, unified top of funnel, being able to search channels, search handles, paste wallets, upload different data sources, and getting this really fun, elegant, curated dashboard with powerful segmentation tools to actually touch the data and interact with the data. And oftentimes you'll see that if we have it in our database, we can link Twitter handles to wallet addresses. So you can even get a sense of their Web2 identity in the on-chain world. And we do all this without needing to write a single line of code. Everything that we do at Bello is predicated off a question-answer-based ideology, where you come to us with questions, we build dashboards, features, products, insights that answer those questions. When people come and interact with a data product, they come with endless amount of questions of wanting to know X and Y and Z about their on-chain audience. And we're trying to show people and teach people that there's more to your on-chain audience than just your collectors, your NFT collectors, and that there's actually many touch points. So bring all of them, it's one big party, and let's see what we can find.
As a result of, whether it be from your experience at Bello or whether it be through Mint Podcast, what surprising insights have you learned? What has kind of been like, oh, wow, okay, that was interesting. I didn't see that once you'd started to analyze on-chain data.
There's some things I could share that are unique to how we built the product.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to refrain from sharing. I think that's a little bit of our spicy sauce. Largely speaking, people came with certain questions before certain trends happened in crypto.
Mm.
For example, one of our customers is Doodles. And before the whole points loyalty meta sort of took crypto Twitter by storm, we've been building loyalty features for over a year. EFP projects would come to us and they want to understand loyalty across all their contracts, because what ends up happening, like OG blue chip projects, they haven't just deployed one contract. They've deployed derivative projects. They've deployed membership passes. They've deployed many other forms of IP around their brand. So someone like, let's say Doodles, for example, has deployed 4 core contracts on mainnet. They want to understand of those people, how many folks collected at least one of every single NFT that they've minted. And then they can understand the loyalty rate amongst their community. Or they want to value and measure of my cohort of 10,492 wallets, how many have spent over 10 ETH? Or how many people have held the NFT for longer than 900 days? Or like all these other like loyalty-based insights that we've already had for well over a year. And we were like primed to capture a lot of that. So there was a really surprising thing how only like these realizations happen in waves. And people only come to these realizations once maybe they become a meta, and then people start caring about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess part of our job is like figuring out what people want before they even know that they want it. Even the dashboards that we create, we have to come up with ideas and come up with insights to build these insights and these metrics before people even know that they want these metrics and these insights. So I think that was one of the more interesting things that we learned. Like, okay, we could be building loyalty products for a year plus, but unless there's a points or some type of loyalty meta, people may be able to get these answers, but they may not be as receptive to them just yet, to know that they even want that just yet, right?
Fascinating. So one thing you've also talked a lot about is going viral on chain. I feel like you're the first person that I've really heard use that language of going viral on chain. Quite honestly, I didn't even really know that that was possible yet. Like, to me, it was still, you go viral on Twitter, you go viral on YouTube, whatnot, but you can go viral on chain. I know you have quite an in-depth view of how to do this. Can you talk us through it, or without it being its own podcast episode?
I'm not the expert on this. There's definitely people that have gone way more viral than me on chain, but I think going viral at least once and then studying how other people are doing it is enough to like build an opinion around it. And one thing that I've learned was that there's like a flywheel effect to how you go viral on chain. And going viral on chain is predicated based off transactions. Okay. And the more people that you can get to mint or buy your meme coin or whatever, and like exchange shitcoin for real cash, you know, or just to like endlessly collect whatever it is that you're minting, the more receptive other people will be to it. And how will they be receptive to it? There's different tools and different platforms that actually enable views for other people to interact and to see what other people are trending. So I think even before we go into on-chain virality, I think it's an important primer to give more context to like, but prior to this new era, specifically in the last year, the way people would go viral, like you said, is they'd use Web2 means as a way to distribute content and distribute information, and Web3 as a way to capture that value. For example, you're an artist on Sound, you have a social media following across crypto Twitter, you mint something on Sound, you post that link in Twitter, hopefully people see it, drives traffic back to Sound, people collect it. Crypto, it works a little bit differently. In crypto, you can likely go viral on Farcaster by boosting a frame through Zora, or by driving a boosted campaign through boost.xyz. And then if enough people mint that, then that gets picked up on aggregators like Mint.Fund and Zora Trending, which each get between a quarter of a mil to a million views every single month, just above the fold. And if that does well, then that likely, like, that starts getting picked up by like influencers, certain wallets that people follow across Thrill or Interface. People that are following those wallets realize what they're collecting, and then that acts as a point of signal And like, there's like this endless flywheel that sort of just happens through social transactions, right? And getting aggregators to aggregate trending transactions that then introduces a new wave of audiences to see what's happening on chain to even contribute to that demand and to that energy. And there's another element of this like flywheel that involves wall-to-wall messaging, which is not 100% there yet, but I think time it's going to get better and more engaging. But being able to target and send a targeted message to folks in their DMs, mix that with the post going viral on Farcaster, mix that with the post that's trending on Mint.Fund and Zora trending, combine that with the influencers across Surreal and Interface that have unique followers that actually drive transaction volume, right, for specific influencers, wallet influencers in the space. And I think there's like this like flywheel that's slowly emerging thanks to Web3 distribution. Another point of that, by the way, is using tools like Daylight, for example, that end up recommending transactions. So if you build an allow list and you submit it through Daylight, then Daylight ends up triggering notifications to your mobile device through Coinbase wallet of folks that have made that allow list. So oftentimes I get notifications now like, hey, your wallet has made this allow list, go mint. Or wallets are building explore pages to curate their feed based off things that are in your wallet. And then that can introduce a whole new system of recommendations and transactions. So it's like a work in progress. There's explore feeds, there's aggregation feeds, there is wallet influencers, there's nativeness, crypto native social networks like Farcaster and Lens that just have crypto native distribution. And we're actually like relying less and less on Web2 distribution. And it's really beautiful to see.
It's wild. We're not even really there yet. But, you know, we're kind of, I mean, even just wall-to-wall messaging, to me, that feels like one of the most obvious things that is going to happen in the next few years that people don't really realize the impact of it or how powerful that will be. Just imagine you can directly communicate with somebody through their wallet. Do you even need their email anymore? Or does that become the new form of email? Too early to tell. We'll see. I want to touch on, before we wrap here, your advice. So you've been experimenting ABE, you've been living the mindset for several years now. You've built Bello, you're working with major brands like Doodles. What advice would you have? And maybe you want to split it into, I don't know if you want to split it into creators and brands separately, or if it's just advice for both. How can they start to think about building their on-chain audience? What do you think they should be doing?
I think it starts with as small as just open up a Farcaster account or a Lens account, start a channel, get wallets to follow you. And then after you build a following on, like even like 100 followers, 200 followers on that, do a survey. Use Dform to put together a wait list of some sort, right? Or get responses and then get more wallets to submit that. And then from there, drop a commemorative NFT of some sort, right? And get those people to engage. And build something cool and drive traffic to your website for wallets to authenticate, to log in, understand who those folks are. And I think there's just like this natural progression of people using crypto-enabled services and crypto-enabled tools that just by default, like it will just happen by default. So there's no real guide. Just use crypto, build in crypto, and you'll build an on-chain audience. And then for the end users, be chronically, terminally on-chain. And the more you are on chain, it pays to be an early user. You know, like you get rewarded for being an early participant, early user on chain. And I'm not just saying like airdrops, like there's knowledge, you know, and like history that you build and experience that you build and context that you build for yourself as a user of understanding how these things work. It oftentimes could act like a college degree of some sort. You know, all the gas fees that you're spending, all the bullshit NFTs and meme coins that you've bought, just enrich your perspective on how things work in the space. So be chronically on chain, use crypto-enabled tools, and we're all going to make it.
Oh, I love it. Levy, the guy who believes that, hey, every shitcoin that went to zero had some value for you because you learned something. AVE all the way through.
Always makes sure anything.
I love it. Okay. For those listeners who want to learn more about yourself or Bello, where can they follow you? Where can they learn more? How can they become part of your on-chain audience?
I'm Levy Chain on Lens, Levy on Farcaster. That's L-E-B-Y. Levy Chain on Twitter. Go to bello.lol and start searching for free. You can start searching and get insights without an account. Hit me up. Keep being chronically on chain. What should I tell you? You can find me on Chain. That's where you'll find me.
Chronically on Chain. That might be the title of this episode. Yeah. Okay, before we wrap, we always like to ask a few fun questions at the end. So yeah. I'm just going to fire a few of these. I did not give these to you in advance to prep. Sometimes I do give them in advance to prep. So feel free to take a breather and take a second to think about your answer. First thing, a must-read book that you find yourself recommending doesn't have to be related to on-chain. Could be anything.
The book that really sparked the fire in me was a book that I came across in high school. A teacher gave it to me. It's called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Great book.
That's always a book that I reference when somebody asks, like, oh, like, what books should I read or what books do you like? Yeah.
And when was that book written? Wasn't it written like 100 years ago?
Something like that.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's still so relevant.
It's good. It's just good. It's just a good book. It's very cliche, but it's a good book. It's a very good book. I would recommend that one.
Cool. One thing you've bought recently for under $100 that brings you joy?
I think a coffee in Paris at NFT Paris. That brought me a lot of joy, like sitting at the cafe.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. That experience was really great.
Is that because you had a nice French croissant or baguette or block of cheese to go along with it?
I didn't have one croissant in Paris.
What?
I had good coffee. And that brings me.
When I was in Paris, I crushed croissants. I was having them everywhere.
It is the European lifestyle of just sitting in a cafe and seeing the world move. It's very nice.
Yeah. Their pace of life. We're over here in North America. I mean, I'm in Canada, you're in the US, just obsessed with productivity. And they're over there just enjoying life, just having a good time.
Tomorrow's a holiday. The next week, we have a couple holidays. The week after that are some more holidays. We're always on holiday.
Okay, last question. If you had a billboard that 1 billion people were going to see, what would you write on it?
Be chronically on chain.
I freaking knew you were going to say that. I love it. Oh, Levy, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for ABEing. Thanks for being a real innovator in the space. Highly recommend that our listeners give you a follow. We'll put the links to all the different on-chain places to meet you that you mentioned in the show notes. Look forward to seeing you on chain, man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me. Hopefully we get to do this again soon.
Right on. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe or follow so that you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, there's a link in the description for our free newsletter where we provide timely and relevant Web3 insights so you can confidently build and invest in Web3. Make sure to subscribe today. One final note. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto and Web3 are risky, and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and see you in the next one.